There was no break in consciousness. I had gone from wakefulness to wakefulness. All that had changed was the dimension. I spent a long time lying on my bed, reliving the experience and allowing the joy and the exhilaration to seep from me. 178. I, another universe, another world. 23rd of July 1976. I was dreaming of diving in and out of traffic in a big city. In my frustration, I lifted up into the air, and at that moment I became lucid. I kept rising high above the city. As I sailed eagle-like across the sky, I observed the most beautiful panoramic landscape. The crescent-shaped city was at the mouth of a huge river pouring its mighty waters into the ocean. Beyond the city were mountains reaching miles high, stretching as far as the eye could see. The vastness and splendor of the landscape was breathtaking. It was so beautiful that I lingered in the air, taking in the sight, planning to make a mental impression, to bring back to Earth in order to paint it. Then, without warning, a tremendous supernatural force plucked me out of midair and carried _m_carat away with frightening speed. I had no power over it. I tried to see what was happening or where I was being taken, but everything was black. I couldn't see a thing. I started to panic and found myself fighting and resisting the force sweeping me into the unknown. Slowly the force relented and abandoned me in a place familiar and close to home in England. I had a strong feeling of regret and wondered what might have happened had I surrendered to the force, just allowed myself to go with it. With this thought in my mind, the same force picked me up again, and in no time at all it dumped me into an environment so alien that I spent ages trying to identify any features that would remind me of anything I had seen before. Gradually, as my eyes adjusted, shapes of unrecognizable objects emerged out of the vagueness. I was on an alien planet. I saw what resembled a body of water, but it wasn't water, it was a crystalline liquid mass, shimmering and shining. The objects floating on or hovering above it could be described as flowers, but they were not flowers. Similar plant-like entities grew around the pond and seemed to be on fire. Flames were coming out of their roots, but it was not fire. It was iridescent light rising from the ground and up through the stems. The thing that was the most striking of all was the indescribable beauty, the harmony that the objects created among themselves and with their environment, and the sounds that rained down on the scene, together with the cascading light emanating from the crystalline pond. 179. The crystals were of an indefinable color, which one moment I thought was silver and bluish the next, getting darker towards the center of the pond, acquiring a rich, deep violet. Pearlescent doesn't do it justice. The borders between what was sight and sound became blurred, and what a moment ago was a liquid object moving in harmony with its surrounding turned out to be a sound with a shape, and so I was never quite certain whether it was a sound I saw or a color with a shape I heard. Drawn as if by intensely irresistible magic, I moved closer to the pond, while the sounds became more enchanting, sweetly luring me closer into their midst. What could have been interpreted as a cacophony of sounds was in fact a grand symphonic masterpiece. I floated towards the edge, weaving between big burning stems and waving shapes, which sent showers of color-like sparks into the air every time I brushed past them. Unlike dandelions, their abundance of seeds were never exhausted and instead drew new breath from the fertile earth on which they grew. Now I was at the very edge of the pond. Through the indigo depth of the liquid I saw large silver bubbles rising to the surface, up to 2 feet in diameter. Momentarily I wondered how much of this beauty I could absorb, because not only were my visual senses challenged to the full, but my heart was struggling in vain to contain all the joy. The bubbles burst with a musical pop when they reached the surface, releasing sounds dressed in misty puffs of color, which rained back down onto the liquid surface. None of this appeared to be random. Everything had its place in this grand symphony of color and sound. The harmonies were multi-layered and seemed to sustain the very existence of this planet. Then I noticed a soft, almost web feeling on my feet. I looked down and realized I was standing on grass, which formed a soft furry skin over the landscape. Even this, when I moved through it, emitted a shimmer of musical notes. Finally, I dipped my toes into the liquid. It was not like water. It was not even wet. It was a sensation I can only describe as invigorating. As I looked in awe and childlike wonder, I saw shapes appearing around the edge of the pond, and before I knew it, a group of 6 or 7 men and women joined their songs with their 180 sweetest sounds of the lake. Their beauty could only be described as angelic, but never having seen an angel, I was at odds to identify where they came from and who they were. All I knew was that their beauty was as harmonious with the scene as their song was with its music. I was entranced, and the joy this gave me was from another world. I cannot compare it with anything I have experienced before. There were joys, millions of joys. On earth there may only be a few, but here there were nuances of joys playing harmonies on my soul, like the music of a harp. Then, as the song faded, the world became quiet. I felt a peace and stillness sweeter than even the music, and I was part of it. I was blessed, sanctified. Gradually, my inquiring mind got the better of me. I had to find out what had happened. I had to know where I was. I turned towards the group, and when my voice finally broke to the surface, I felt like a bull in a china shop. My voice was polluting. It was destroying something with its total irrelevance, and yet I was unable to stop it. "Excuse me for intruding," I said. "Could you please tell me, what plane ... what level of life I am in?" The people looked at each other, bemused. One turned towards me, not quite sure what meaning was behind such a question. They couldn't imagine being on any other plane. I thought of a way of putting the question more precisely. "Am I in heaven? What is heaven anyway?" I heard how inadequate and crude my words were, how inappropriate even my thoughts were. There was no point to it. It was as if by using my mind I had to etherealize this world, and gradually I lost my grip and found myself in my body, but not quite. I was in another room, surrounded by people. I told them in the best way that I could what I had experienced, flashing images of my memory at them, redrawing the scene and conjuring up the sounds. I had a keen audience. Some of them were relatives of mine, who had died many years ago. Then I woke up and sketched down on paper what I had witnessed. Had it not been for the fact that I had related the events to an audience on the other dimension, I doubt that I would have been able to bring the memory over to this world. 18 Castaneda suggests in his teachings of Don Juan to focus on the hands to gain lucidity. 181 Silver Worlds, July 24, 1977. I had an intensive and long lucid dream. Unfortunately, I failed to imprint the events on my physical brain before returning to my body, hence most of it got lost. The experience which left a clear memory behind was quite unpleasant. When I became lucid in my dream, I used the Castaneda 18 techniques in order to deepen my awareness and establish full waking consciousness. This meant focusing my attention on my hands. However, I was horrified to find instead of my hands two ugly claw-like stumps, shriveled up and filthy. Seeing a mirror nearby, I looked into it and was shocked to find it covered in filth. I used a basin to wash my hands and face until I felt I was clean, but when I looked into the mirror again, I found to my horror that my face was covered in plant-like scabs. I felt diseased and impure and struggled in vain to rid myself of the impurities. A little later during the same episode, I was fighting an irresistible sexual urge, which was triggered by the company of 3 females, who did everything in their power to encourage me to have sex with them. It would have been too easy to surrender, but I resented the fact that I was being manipulated. All my attention was taken over by very basic instincts over which I had no control. The moment I relented slightly to the power of these urges, my alertness and waking consciousness became dulled and numb, and I slipped into a drowsy dream. The women, in their roles as seductresses, did everything they could to lure me into this dark and blind reality. Under normal circumstances, the easiest and most natural thing would have been to allow the sex drive to take its course and unload its power through the dream and leave me feeling relieved and relaxed in the process. At this point, however, that was the last thing I wanted. I was craving the purity and sublime joys of a higher consciousness, as I had experienced before. The result was that I awoke. I 182. The mirror experience and the lack of control made me realize that there was an area in my subconscious mind which demanded urgent attention. Without getting out of bed, I went into meditation to purify my consciousness, and after about 20 minutes I was prepared to confront my demons. Almost as soon as I hit the pillow and closed my eyes, I was out of my body and fully lucid again. This time I found myself floating above open countryside, then rooftops. Occasionally, my energy was sapped away and I descended to the ground. Gathering positive feelings, I rose into the air again until I managed finally to maintain a consistent altitude. Beneath me I saw streets, rivers, fields and hills. Finally I came to land on the roof of a large mansion. A few hundred yards away from the house I saw a couple. The woman pointed at me shouting, "Look, there is another deep sleeper." I turned towards them, amazed at hearing them so clearly over such a distance, and I said to her, "Yes, you are right, I am a very deep sleeper, but wide awake." The woman looked at me and giggled. Then I took off again. After soaring through the air, I felt more at ease in my new surroundings, and towards the horizon I saw a luminous band of colorful light. The attraction was irresistible. As I got closer, I found that the whole land was made out of silvery light, so bright in fact that it proved rather uncomfortable to my eyes. Its pull, however, was irresistible. I speculated that this at last may be the heaven so many talked about. My heart beat with joy and anticipation. Slowly and gently I drifted downwards, accustoming myself gradually to the light. It was as if I was stepping out of a dark cellar into the bright sunlight at noon. Beneath me shimmered a silvery sea of light, and before me stretched an enormous valley through mountains higher than any mountain range on Earth. A long series of lakes passed beneath me, every one individual yet all in perfect harmony. Each new feature of land triggered a new kind of feeling. I recognized this as a giant pattern of creation, which became more intricate as I rose higher again. Yet this was only the beginning. Beyond the valley, lights rising from the land promised new splendors, which made the current scene beneath me appear like the black of night. The closer to the lights I got, 183, the more familiar I felt with my surroundings. This, I felt, was where the word home came from. This was the essence of home. And when I felt or said the word home in the physical world, it was only a faint reflection, a frail memory, too far removed from its essence of the real home to have any real meaning at all. Curiously, the most challenging feeling to bear was the intensity of the joy I felt. I was unprepared for it. It was a joy synonymous with a blinding light, which became more intense and closer to pain the further I traveled inland, until I could not bear it any longer. The story of Icarus came to mind. I needed to return before I was burned up in the flames. I opened my eyes in my bed. After this experience, I was haunted by the possibilities of entering dimensions I'd only heard or read about through remote religious fantasies, magical tales and fairy worlds. There have been travelers to these worlds before me, who have tried desperately to convey a feeling or a description of the environments. I can understand why they likened it to our physical sky with its shining soft clouds, as indeed there were clouds, glorious bands of light of ever-shifting color. What on this earth can be more beautiful than a cloud? I could see the frustrations of my predecessors who had traveled to these regions, knowing perfectly well that whatever the description they could deliver, in words or in images, it would fall desperately short of their true experience. In the cold light of physical day, I realized it was not heaven I had been to, It was a dimension as real as Earth, yet so far removed from our limited experiences that it cannot be described here. I had to go back. I had to find out how it worked, what it was made of, and how it came to exist. In the next few days, this was all that was on my mind. It was as if I had taken a sip from the fountain of life, and I needed more. I knew that what I had touched upon contained the reason for the existence of everything on Earth, the Jaeger of all images, all words and all human desires. 191 checked with my brother later, to see if he could remember anything. He couldn't. 184 Stairway to Heaven 11th of August 1980 It had been such an exhausting night of lucid dreaming, that I forgot most of it by the morning, having failed to imprint it on my brain. I had been visiting ancient civilizations, but only fragments of my experiences were left. More importantly, I had been put to work by my silent companion to assist a number of dying people, helping them across to the other side. I felt mentally exhausted and rested, fully awake, in a beautiful meadow. My full waking consciousness was enhanced by an intense feeling of being, which turned my surroundings into a place of paradise. Unexpectedly, my younger brother had joined me and I was delighted to see him. It was the most perfect summer's day and the atmosphere was full of joy and promise. I said to my brother that we should use the opportunity and explore this land a bit more, like a nice holiday. I also told him he should make sure first that he was fully awake. He laughed as if I was joking. 19. As we walked through the sublime countryside, the light and the brilliance of the day become more glorious with the distance we covered. A steep path meandered upwards towards a great summit which seemed miles above us. This was the route we chose for our walk, drawn naturally towards the peak of the snow-covered mountain in the distance, especially as there was no physical exertion involved whatsoever. On either side of our path were entrancing fields with rich green and flowers you can find on Earth in tropical gardens. A small stream spattered down the hill towards us in beautiful melodies. Relishing the splendor and the rarefied air, we felt inspired by the fact that we might be walking towards heaven. Rather than reaching the top, though, we found that our path kept rising higher and higher, without ever actually getting closer to the summit. Finally, we arrived at a structure, which resembled a grand cathedral, sitting on a large plateau. It was a round, ornate building, which reminded me of the Basilica of St. Peter's in Rome. The stairs, 185 looking back down the mountain, we felt as though we had covered a huge distance. We rested among the splendor of our surroundings. Compared to the sight we enjoyed presently, the area we had come from appeared dark and murky. As we entered the hall, I was aware of an intense yet invisible presence, benevolent and loving, which gave me an intense and lasting thrill. The whole interior of this great sanctuary was taken up by a gigantic staircase. If I said it was made out of gold, it would be an insult to the architect. On either side at the bottom of the stairs stood two gigantic beings about 7 or 8 feet tall. They radiated great authority and wisdom, but it was the authority of love, which could under no circumstances be assailed. This love gave us the courage to ascend the apparently endless flight of stairs. The stairs high above us were shrouded in golden mist, which drifted in waves towards us, shimmering with every step we took. Each step was like entering the territory of new and unfamiliar dimensions, which increased my clarity of mind the higher we rose. Despite the fact that I had never been here before, I had the impression that I was on home ground, on my own turf. The place was hauntingly familiar, as if I was just about to return to the place of my birth. My heart began to beat heavily with anticipation and every step gave me a thrill. I looked around and saw my brother waiting on carrying a simple earthenware goblet. "What are you waiting for?" I asked. He pointed to the goblet, which he held in one hand, and showed me that it had dirt in it. "LCJ? I have to go back," he said. "I have to clean it." He turned and went down the huge flight of stairs again. I said that he didn't have to go all the way down again because, The atmosphere here is so pure it would take care of it, it would clean it right here. He held up the goblet and soon the dirt began to clear, but not all of it. He looked at it and told me that he would have to go down to clear the rest, but perhaps not all the way down. His decision to turn made me feel uncertain, and the scene around me began to fade as I returned to physical awareness. I had 186 been close to my true home. The experience was still present, there was hardly a break in consciousness. With my eyes still closed, I saw part of me completing my ascent and disappearing into a brilliant light. I was still holding the bright light and the golden staircase in my mind when I opened my physical eyes. Bliss spread through me. My head was filled with light. The symbolic meaning of the lotus flower became clear to me. It has its roots in the mud underneath the water, but its head was breathing fresh air and enjoyed the light of the sun. This is how our lives should be, I thought, while our bodies toil in the dense atmosphere of the world, our spirit should be exposed to the sun. It took a while before the feeling ebbed away. I pondered whether other people had been to that place before me. Jacob's ladder, the grand stairway to heaven, an interpretation of the mind's expanding consciousness as it enters higher dimensions. It was as real as the bed I was lying on. I felt transformed, purified. The light in my head dimmed gradually, but when I got up, the silent presence which had greeted me in the hall was still there, alongside me, watching me pouring boiling water on the tea bag in my mug and putting bread into the toaster. It was there sitting with me at the table having breakfast. When I looked up, it was in the furniture, in my sweet wife who came down sleepily and gave me a kiss, carrying our young daughter. It was still the later that morning when I said hello to our neighbor, and in the car that went past me when I rode my bicycle to work. It was on the pavement and even in the litter bin. Despite the busy studio where I worked, there was a stillness at work. The staff, involved in their usual role play, were like ripples on a placid lake. I felt good inside and glad that nobody noticed. And as for the light in my head, I only had to remember it and it was there again, while my body carried on as usual. I thought about rainy days, thunderstorms and dark heavy clouds, and I realized that it didn't matter what the weather was like, all the time the sun above the clouds shone constantly. Part 3 The Final Frontiers 18 The Final Frontiers 189 How is it possible that events we regard as happening only within our 3 pounds of brain tissue can be as real as in our waking life? How is it possible that we can experience worlds inside our heads so much grander than the one we encounter with our eyes open? How can we possibly tie these experiences merely to the firing of nerve endings in our physical brains? What is this brain anyway when it is broken down into its constituent parts? It is no more and no less than a galaxy of energy, particles, atoms, protons and electrons, and so forth. What and where are these particles? Are they on the inside or the outside? And is there such a thing as inside and outside? Where does the territory of our being begin and end? Where do all our experiences really take place? I cannot decide which is the more miraculous, our out-of-body experiences as the result of electric activity between nerve endings within our brains, or as the result of activities in other dimensions. To me, the former seems to be the more outrageous and far-fetched. Some skeptics insist that out-of-body experiences are phenomena of neural function and that what we experience is probably no more than a fantasy. Yes, but what is this fantasy? And where is it enacted? How does a chemical process create it? Does it not make more sense to extend the established fact of this worldly dimension with all its still unsolved mysteries into another dimension? This would make more sense and would allow us to approach the whole complex issue from a more scientific angle. Simply, it will not do for people to put people who have out-of-body experiences into a metaphorical New Age loony bin just because they cannot bring themselves to accept that there are things in the world that we cannot explain with the logic of our left brain hemisphere. For many, If it is not testable by traditional scientific methods, then it does not. Lanny out-of-body experiences don't take us much further. 20c chapter How Past Lives Are Experienced. 190 Warrant Serious Investigation. Could it be that certain scientific methods may just be a little too limited? From my point of view, as one who has been subject to out-of-body experiences, I find it more plausible and down-to-earth to consider that all life in the physical universe is the offshoot of multi-dimensional super-universe. Multiple universes theories have been made already by string theorists, though whether the dimensions I am speaking of are anything like what they had in mind is uncertain. Eventually, scientists will have to abandon their pursuit of the unifying theory of everything, or M-theory, because the new dimensions are beyond the scope of language in this three-dimensional environment. I think that in order to penetrate deeper into the mysteries of creation, more use should be made of the right brain hemisphere, by focusing on sound beyond words, on intuition rather than mathematics, and on direct experience rather than hypothesis. Perhaps in 100 years from now, scientific experiments may be conducted in new ways. Counting the nerve endings and cataloging and categorizing the parts in our three-dimensional skull may bring big benefits in understanding behavior and the phenomena of our cognitive systems, but they won't solve the core mystery behind our fantastic brain. And for scientists to consider any form of space travel beyond the solar system, they may have to consider evolutionary non-physical means of travel. Many out-of-body travelers will tell them that they can save themselves billions of dollars by focusing their efforts on a specific point within their brain in order to open the wormhole to another galaxy. I have already documented how time travel works in a previous chapter 20. All that is needed is a scientific mindset to access the right information. At present, many out-of-body experiences don't take us much further than beyond the "I'm flying, isn't that amazing?" level. People feel it is safer and socially more acceptable to talk about traditional scientific methods and experiences, so that they can keep face in front of friends and colleagues. A paradigm shift towards new science may require a bold, slightly loony, in the eyes of most, explorer, who is not overly concerned about his image, who beavers away quietly in his out-of-body laboratory until he emerges sleepy-eyed with the first live broadband link to our deceased relatives. 191 Preparing for the ultimate adventure. I have nearly reached the end of the book, and I feel I should end it with one of my most sustained and powerful experiences to date. Although it was entered into my journal way back in 1980, it was one of the most in-depth, most vibrant out-of-body experiences I have ever had, spanning several hours and penetrating into the heart of creation, or what I saw as the core dimension of reality. It is difficult, if not impossible, to avoid using overly poetic language or the terminology of the mystics, because simply there is not as yet a common understanding of what pure reality is. I hope you will look beyond my limitations and employ your own intuition to fill in any gaps, because I am certain that what I experienced may ring strangely familiar to some people. You may have already been there in deep sleep, but unable to bring it through the physical barriers of the brain. What I saw appears to be at the very core of our nature, and I find it impossible to believe that I am on my own in having experienced it. Apart from noting down the most important points in my diary over several pages, I relied on the nonverbal power of my right brain hemisphere to keep the memory of what I had witnessed in a more intuitive and visual format than I could have recorded on paper. Even now, using deep eye meditation to recall and to a degree relive the event, I struggled to avoid cliché when describing it. Yet the event gave me a new perspective on many of the mysteries of our being. The super-reality I experienced in this state of consciousness made ordinary life appear almost trivial, like random thought, not even a dream. I have the feeling that consciousness on these high dimensions may be our future common ground as a human species. Compared to this, we in our present state of evolution are like some prehistoric creature emerging from the mud. The powers available to us will be immense. We will be interwoven intricately with a supreme cosmic intelligence. We may already be the beneficiaries of our future selves, who can project themselves into any one of our past, present and future lives and assert a guiding influence if so chosen. We are our own guardian angel, spirit guide and mentor. We are our own God.